do you want compliance or do you want less emotional chaos breakdown and do you want more relationship? Sometimes you can't have both.
Welcome to the Real Life Parents, Real Life Answers podcast with Sean and Jasmine Turner and sponsored by ParentEQ.com. Welcome to another episode of Real Life Parents, Real Life Answers. This is Jasmine, and I am here to introduce our part two with Mom Kara and Sean. This portion of their interview ended up going a different direction. We kind of had that first episode with them that you might have already listened to, and this second one focuses on doing school at home, which you could say is homeschooling, but a lot of people have been thrown into that. So it's a lot of awesome information about how to work with your kids when you are doing it in a home setting. In particular, Kara is a mom that works from home. So it's like a double whammy. She's doing school with the kids at home. She's also doing her work from home. And I love all the insights that she offers and the insights that Sean adds. You're going to absolutely love this episode. So without any further ado, here you go.
How are your kids with doing all the school and stuff and being home? How's that going?
It depends on the day. So my older one is struggling with reading. I actually think he might be dyslexic, which I just discovered the other day. And that's why we're struggling. The four-year-old, he's almost five. He loves the crap out of it, but we're using a lot of gaming stuff to do it.
There you go.
We have worksheets and things, but he gets points for stuff. We have goals we do every week. Like, I took a lot of my business stuff and just applied it to my kids.
Absolutely. Real life. Yeah. So
we have like a giant goal board, and every week they set their goals. They get points for goals, that kind of stuff. So they usually do okay with those things. A seven-year-old gets frustrated when we're back into reading and language arts because he's not – basically because his little brother's catching up and it's making him panic. And so we're trying to work harder on that. Sometimes they're great.
Right.
Sometimes it's
rough. So here's my suggestions with that, and I'm going kind of therapy mode because here's what I found. The frustration is actually going to be a block. It's going to block his learning. So as a parent, though, we don't see that because we see the issue. So this, I forgot to kind of look at this model. The model is know yourself and understand yourself. Know the other person. You can use this model for a marriage, so that would be your spouse. But in this case, it's your child. Know them. Know their personality, their strengths, their weaknesses. The third part of it is the issue. What's the actual issue? The idea here is when you know yourself enough and you've worked on the things and you've gathered skills, a lot of the time the issue just solves itself. And sometimes what we'll do is we'll skip over knowing ourselves and knowing the child and go straight to the issue. So we'll say, no, he has to get the assignment done. That's the issue. Well, kind of, because do you want compliance or do you want less emotional chaos breakdown and do you want more relationship? Sometimes you can't have both, especially with little kids. You can't have all the things. You got to pick one. And if a child is getting really, really frustrated, they're not learning anything. They aren't, because we do this, right? So the idea is if we spent time on that concept, we would now internalize it, know it. We would own it. We would know how to deal with it. Because we're doing it for ourselves, then we're going to go, oh, okay, wait a minute. He's breaking down because I'm pushing just to get it done, when in reality, I'm skipping over him. So my suggestion is focus on the frustration. And it sounds like you're on that road because you're talking to him about regulating his emotions in other areas. Keep doing that with the schoolwork, because from my experience, putting schoolwork ahead of him as a person, you guys as a relationship will only cause problems down the road.
That makes
It'll
sense.
Totally cause more problems. And I know sometimes we need to think short-sighted, like we got to get this assignment done. Well, really though? I mean, really? Do we really though? I mean, do we? Do I need the teacher's approval that much that my child has to be getting the grade, the right grade? Maybe I do. Maybe I do. I'm not judging that. There are many parents that need that world to be the right way. But things come at a cost.
So, and I'm thinking as you're talking, so we'll go back to my 7-year-old isn't learning as well as he should. So he is behind.
Behind what?
Behind in reading. So like if I am to compare him to children his age, he is learning and reading at a lower grade level in reading. And so like to me, not to me, like he absolutely does eventually have to learn how to read. To function in the world, this child has to read. But I am thinking as you're talking that maybe I'm pushing him too hard on some of those reading. Just do it. That's what I've been doing. Until just the other day when I started wondering if he's dyslexic. And then if we take that into a different point, I know you're struggling with this. Let's try it like this. How do you feel? Does this help? Like, you don't. I'm processing all of that
absolutely
out loud.
Here's where I would suggest, listen to this. Because the fear is, if he doesn't learn to read properly at 7, he's not going to be a functioning adult. Wait.
That is my fear.
Wait. Correct. Let's say that out loud. If he doesn't learn how to read at the level of a 7-year-old right now, he's not going to be a functioning adult. So 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. So all those years in between 7 and 27, we're just going to throw out and completely ignore because he's never going to learn it in those years because he has to learn it right now at 7 years old, because at 27, he's going to be living under a bridge or on his third divorce. Wait, what? I play around with this. Okay. I play around with this, but you'd be surprised at how many parents have that feeling. Now, that was very specific, I know. But yeah, you'd be surprised at how many parents have that literal feeling. It's real.
Yeah, no, it is because that's a bit of how I feel. I mean, obviously now we're exaggerating it a little bit to prove your point, and that makes sense. That we kind of need to give him some time, and it's probably okay. I want to. He loves books. We read at least 30 minutes a night, easily. We've read all of Harry Potter. We're reading other ones, like all of that stuff. And I want to help him with this, but I do wonder now, as you're saying that, if I'm pushing him in the wrong ways, because I am so afraid of him not being able to.
Right. So rather than lead by, and you're getting this. You're actually being a good example of understanding yourself. And am I pushing my fear over who he is? So I got to go back then. And what's the fundamental part is understanding myself and go, okay, wait a second. I do have a fear that he's going to be living under a bridge at 27 because he can't read at 7 years old. Okay, hold on a second. I know that's specific. I know. But right. I know. No. But for the point of the exercise here. So then I've got to go, okay, hold on a second. I let's pretend that fear is real. Because, I mean, technically it could. Right. We could come up with examples, but okay. But do I want to lead with fear? Because if I lead with fear, it's only going to create anxiety, frustration. We can use fear as a motivation. Absolutely. Fear is not negative, but sometimes we look at it as that. So we turn it to the positive and go, okay, I don't want to fear that he's going to live under a bridge when he's 27, but I could use some of that fear that he could lose self-worth, his confidence will go down now, and that could sow seeds, but let's keep it to now. So is it really about the reading, or is it about his understanding of what he's going through? Oh, that's like when I'm learning how to get over this idea that I'm going to lose my business if I don't do everything, right? If I do everything, I have to do everything or I'm going to lose my business. When in reality, if business owners out there know that you can't do everything.
No, you can't.
It's not, that's not a thing, right? And those who have failed know that that's, yeah, that's not a thing. Or that have figured it out. And then they do. Yeah. So the idea is reframing, okay, what is the actual issue here? Because the issue is important, but it's number three right now. It's number three. It's on, it's over there. What is the issue? Okay, what am I, how am I reacting to it? How am I framing it for myself and for my child? And then what is he capable of? And I'm glad that you brought up that maybe he does have a learning issue there. Maybe there's a developmental issue there or something. And you don't want to like perpetuate it or blow it out of proportion, but you definitely need to have it on your radar.
So he thinks very logically. Rhyming was super hard for him because he doesn't understand how those words relate. So I'm like, what rhymes with bed? And he's like, pillow, because there's a pillow on my bed. And his brain is just so intensely logical. And he needs to know exactly why something's done certain ways. So as we're talking about this, I'm wondering if there is just different, there are different ways to teach how to read than our standard public school or even the programs that we're using right now. And so maybe talking to somebody who can help me dissect different ways to teach him. So I'm teaching him his way.
Right.
So that his little logical brain can be like, oh, A says A because.
Right.
Whatever else. Because he's just so analytical.
Right. And the more that you can connect the learning with him personally, and then also emotions, because he could be learning, and I'm not going to say he is, but he could be learning that learning has to be frustrating and you have to feel frustrated and it has to be painful. So here's another story through education world, right? I would have parents come and say, hey, we have a problem. My child hates math. That's actually a big thing. Your children hating math. And I was like, okay. So after observing and watching and all my experiences in public school and learning about kids, I was like, okay, so they hate something, but then what's the reality here? The reality is the parents are pushing it because they have a fear that if they don't learn math, they're going to be a failure all the way through their childhood and into their adulthood. Okay, so parents are pushing. Everyone's frustrated. What if we just took a timeout? What if we just stopped for a second? In sporting events, when things get chaos or out of control, you call a timeout. And sometimes even in real life, we need a break, clear our heads, come back. And it was really, really hard for parents to grasp this idea that if we just stopped, and what I would have to do is help them realize they're not learning because of the negative energy, the negative emotions. They're actually learning that your guys' relationship is contingent upon them doing something rather than just being a human being and their child. Mm-hmm. They're learning that learning has to be super hard and difficult, and they're learning that math is horrible, and they're learning that they're a bad person, all because of they need to do math. That doesn't sound smart. So I was like, let's just stop. And then it was like, well, you can't just stop. Well, hold on a second. During the summer months, they just stop. Are they like regressing? Do they get stupider? Do they unlearn everything? Now, there, of course, there's actually a little bit of unlearning, but that doesn't matter. The idea is, okay, what if we just stopped? And after my experiences going through, I could actually guarantee the parents that I could have them after a certain amount of time, and it was actually really small, maybe 3 to 4 weeks. I could have them in a situation where you have to tell them to stop doing math. I could guarantee them that. I actually, at one point, because it was a private school and we had tuition, that's how we ran. Mm-hmm. I wrote him a check. I didn't actually write the check, but I told him I will write you a check and give you back your tuition. If they don't, if you don't, you or I say, stop doing math. Because they didn't believe me. And I get it. Of course they didn't believe me, but I get it. But I learned how to speak their language and I learned who they were and I learned what the issue was. And I, to this day, no one's taking me up on it now because I'm not necessarily in the education world, but I could, if you bring me a child who says they hate math, give me 2 or 3 weeks. You have to trust me. I could have them doing so much that you have to tell them to stop. Because, and it's not gimmicky. It's not manipulative. I don't go secretly, hey, do this and I'll give you half the money. You know, which what it actually does work with teenagers sometimes. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here either, because it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be just like learning their language, learning what their needs and wants are. And as a young child, we see that. It's just we have to be secure in our own self, because sometimes that's a blind spot in us. Mm-hmm. So if we don't know it, we can't see it. I mean, as adults, we should know what kind of motivates us and what doesn't. And we should know how we do things and our personality. But if we don't, then guess what? That's step one. That's the first step. Definitely. So with your son, I would suggest right now, when he gets frustrated, figure out, this is going to be hard, but figure out how to stop making math the issue or reading the issue and focus on, okay, what are you feeling? What are you going through? Voice it, talk about it, just like you've done before with the books and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Teach him that method. Because do you know what's cool? Is when you see him get frustrated and he's over there learning and then he goes through that. Because you've taken him through that process and then he then moves on to what he needs. You know, the stream of light comes down. You're like, oh, it's a win. It's a win. Oh my gosh. That's so much better than them handing in their assignment and you getting a report card back that says A. Really, it is. That moment when you see, at least from my perspective, I think it should be. But at the same time, you know, is we have to teach them through, because they're not learning anything when they're frustrated, when they're in a chaotic moment, they're not. So what if we just took a time out, worked through, did the breathing thing, or maybe even just stopped for a little while and then, you know, kind of go back through it. Yeah. The dyslexia thing also is something definitely, you know, to keep on the radar and look at. And, you know, you can have them tested, or you can even just kind of educate yourself on what works and what you can do to help them. Because the key isn't that you found that he's dyslexic. The key is helping him be confident in it.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's very smart. And I'm understanding that I need to take him to an actual physician to have him diagnosed. And I don't know what benefits that give me, except that he's going to know that he had to go to a doctor to say he learned wrong.
So what is your gut telling you to do?
My gut is telling me that we're just going to find some different ways to teach him and move on. There's no reason we have to dredge this all up. He learns different and it's not a big deal.
Right. And so this is the thing about knowing the child as well, just like knowing the other person you're dealing with. Because there are times when, yeah, kids have gone to the doctor and it actually ended up being like a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
Now, it's not always and it doesn't have to be. But if you know your child enough to go, wait a second, we could actually build a really good relationship and confidence and self-worth, because the child and mother bond is way bigger and more complex and stronger than the child doctor.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So absolutely. I mean, but at the same time, there's going to be people going, I don't know how to do that. That sounds exhausting. That sounds way out of my league. Okay, then absolutely. Then, you know, the idea is then you go with them. You be a part of the experience. Because whenever you put a label of anything, they're going to identify that. And labels don't have to be negative, but most of the time we make them negative.
And that's what I don't want to do. I want to be very careful with that, especially because he internalizes so much. He needs a lot of accolades and being told he's doing well, that kind of stuff. So I don't want, I think he would go that way.
That's why I've, I can't remember the guy's name. ADHD is a big deal now. And one guy, he started way back in the 80s. He's really old now, but he had this whole program of like ADHD is a superpower. It's actually a positive thing because he saw the negative effects.
Yeah.
And so I see people now going, no, I love my ADHD. I love being able to do this and that. And I'm like, wow, that's a real big shift from in like the 90s or whenever, you know, whatever. I was growing up then and they're like, it's a label and it's a negative thing and you were put down for it or medicated, yeah. You know, and then you're like a zombie walking around. Right. But the idea there is to, if you do, and I'm glad you're being sensitive about it, because that label, he could go, well, how come my brother's not? So then now he's all mm-hmm. taking it as a negative thing in his self-worth and his identity. But you don't also want to do it on the other end. You know, you don't want to blow it out of proportion to where he's kind of blinded on what it is and then puts everybody else down because of it.
Yeah.
So normal, and you'll know what to do because you understand. You understand him the most out of anybody.
His dad might understand him the most, but it's okay.
Between the two of you, yeah, there you go.
So it's fine. We're like a decent parent when we're like
there together, you go.
So it's okay.
There you go. Do you have any other questions on another topic that we might just real quick be able to give some things or little nuggets that you've learned?
I can quite literally talk for 10 hours straight. So I used to teach a really long class.
Nice.
So we probably should start wrapping up.
Okay.
Because you'll be like, oh my gosh, this girl does not shut up.
Well, then let's end on this part. What are like, because I know, again, my style is a big picture, principle-based, and I tend to more focus on like parenting is about us as parents. So let's focus. And then parents are like, well, just I need something else. Do you have any little tiny like tricks of the trade that you're like, yeah, this works really well most of the time? It doesn't have to work perfectly, but do you got any of those?
Trade. Oh, you know what? I guess I might have like a couple for like right now things. Oh, I don't even know because it just depends so much on who you're
right, right, right. Well, that, and that's fine too. Just whatever.
So one of our favorite things though, is we do take every month. We have a no tech week.
Wow.
For our kids, unless we're working in the office, which we have a very defined office space, which I already talked about. So we do have like a really intense no tech week every month. The first time we did it was hell. but as we've done it, like that was a huge right now tip for us is our kids learn to do more things. They're learning to get along better with each other. They are learning to be more creative and they're not as angry when they're in front of the, when they're not in front of the TV all day. Shocker. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a huge one for us. Just like we started with just a day and then we just kind of started moving it out and now we have a solid.
Okay. So you, yeah. So you, awesome. One day and then a couple days, because a week's a long time.
A week's a long time.
I can imagine, you know, with kids, it's kind of distracting them, keeping them busy. Teenagers, they definitely need to do this, you know, kind of purge themselves. They're going to be, it's a different monster to deal with, like their anxiety mm-hmm. about this stuff. The boredom monster comes in, you know, I'm bored. Mm-hmm. Well, so you have to have, I mean, there's so many things you can do with teenagers when they talk about boredom. The whole like bored people are boring. Oh, you know, you don't want to throw it at them. I've learned these things called diffusers. Oh, I love diffusers.
Uh-huh.
It's like the one statement that they can't like refute because that's what it is. It's called a diffuser. And I've got on websites and people have written out some really good ones from different age groups or whatever. And you mainly want to do this with teenagers, partially to keep the relationship because banter turns into arguing, turns into resentment, mm-hmm. turns into anger. But banter's fun. It's really fun. And teenagers always want to have the last word. And we as adults always want to have the last word. So diffusers are really fun. So Google diffusers for teenagers. Practice them.
I need that for my 7-year-old. Yes. He is basically a teenager right now anyway, and I only love him on occasion. No, I love him all the time. I don't always like
right,
him.
Right, right. Well, that's cool, because that's actually a whole nother podcast on like how much tech is enough. What if they're addicted? Mm-hmm. What if what do we do? And yeah, it's actually, it's complicated, but it's doable. You know, there are.
Well, and I have some of the same tech issues they do. Like if I'm on social media all day, it doesn't make me feel mm-hmm. better. Right. And then I'm shorter with them. So when we do a no tech week, my husband and I participate too. It's not like the kids mm-hmm. can't do tech. We all do it. We do watch a movie at night occasionally during right. that week. So we're not like super religious about it.
Right.
But you know, like, yeah, it's hard to manage it all, yeah. even as like an adult. And so we're trying to teach our kids that like you can live without it, even though some days are
right. painful. I just listened to a podcast that talked about it was a therapist or life coach or one of those talking very, you know, famous or whatever, had a big clinic or something. And he was saying that up until about 5 years ago, it was always parents coming to him saying, my kid is addicted to technology. My kid, what do I do? What do I do? Now, it started about 5 years ago. It's like at least 50% kids are coming to him saying, my parents are addicted to it. My parents are always on their phones, always on the computers, always. And so there is this shift. And I thought that was interesting because those kids are going to grow up to be the adults in a world yeah. where we have no clue what it's going to be like. We don't know yeah. what tech's going to be like in 2030, barring that we don't have any more COVID and quarantining and all that kind of crazy stuff. But that might be even perpetuated even more. Who knows? So yeah. we don't know. So how do we prepare our kids for 2030? That's only 10 years. And tech is yeah. growing so much. How do we prepare them? Well, I always go back to, okay, there are things you can figure out and do, but addictions usually stem from emotions, emotional regulation. And another thing too is connection. So if they're only connecting with tech, they need to connect with real people or things that aren't tech. So it's a mm-hmm. connection and an emotion issue. So if we can teach our kids now who are going to be the adults in 2030, 2020, 2040, do you know when your kids are going to live, right? If they live like 80 years, what's 80 years from 2020? Holy crap. I mean, barring that nothing like civilizational type craziness happens, if things keep going, no apocalyptic type stuff. But the point being is, do you know what will always be like an issue or a foundational piece is the emotional stability. And that could mean just yeah. being flexible, like understanding. So here's something I'll kind of end with, and it's something we don't talk about, but I probably will do a podcast on it. Is executive functioning skills. These are things like, I know there's weird science about it, but things like multitasking, things like flexibility, things like, I'm throwing awareness in there. It's not necessarily, but it is observation. Things like planning, following through with plans. Things like emotional regulation comes when we do executive and learn these skills. But if we, and there's about 10 or 12 ones that are kind of the most famous, I shouldn't say famous, but most apparent. But that might be something that you can also learn as a person, because we do, but usually we're forced to do it. Like you own your own business. So yeah. you're forced to plan. You're forced to be flexible. And sometimes yeah. we resent that. But what if we learned it as a skill and we're teaching then our kids to do it? Then whatever comes at 20 in the year 2030, whatever comes, they're hopefully secure and stable enough, and they're not worrying too much about like the emotional dysregulation and other yeah. mental health issues.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's what I would suggest, that. Emotional regulation, kind of a recap. So understanding yourself emotionally, your mental state, your behaviors, understanding your children and their personality traits, understanding the issues. Are we blowing it out of proportion? Are we minimizing it? is it more, is it deeper than we thought? But going back to the kids and understanding them, and then obviously understanding ourselves. And then I threw in, right, what, the executive functioning skills. And literally all I do, I just Google it, Google executive functioning skills or whatever thing you use to Google things. Because now Google's a thing, a noun and a verb, right? You Google it.
Exactly.
Well, good, good. This has been great. Thanks for letting me talk with you today.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. That was fun.
Well, that wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, you can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, Real Life Parents Podcast. And again, if you want to be a guest on the show, whether anonymously, like if you don't want to be out there with your name, that's totally fine. Or you can be out there with your name. Please email us at reallifeparentspodcast@gmail.com. It's kind of a mouthful. reallifeparentspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for your support. Please don't forget to leave us a rating. It means a lot to us when you do, either a rating or a comment. It always helps our podcast get in front of more people. Thanks again, and we will see you at the next episode. Last but not least, the advice provided on this podcast does not constitute or serve as a substitute for professional psychological treatment, therapy, or other types of professional advice or intervention. If you have concerns about your child's well-being, consult a physician or mental health professional.